Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton is fine. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm hungry for some news or for some Cavs or for something. This All-Star break has felt interminable. I think the condensed schedule has made a nine-day absence really, really, really long. And I'm really hungry to get back.
I feel you, man. I'm so self-involved. I thought the league was coming back on Friday, and I found out that there's games today as we're recording on Wednesday night. Maybe I've just been a little too busy with work, but this is not all about me. We have a very, very special guest here from Fox Sports Ohio, Angel Gray. Angel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And I'll add this, Carter. I'm happy with this break that we get. Five games in 1 week is not ideal covering, you know, but we get to do what we, you know, cover the sport that we love. So this is exciting. But let me tell you, I am so happy that the guys had a break. We had a break, and, you know, it was a nice halftime for us. So we can.
Yeah. What'd you do with your downtime? And, you know, I guarantee you, there's a running joke on this podcast that I just don't watch the games. So people will say that I don't do any work. So very different than the amount of hours you got to put
in. You are absolutely nothing but downtime, Carter.
That's okay. You know, you just got to, you know, take advantage of that downtime and just, you know, create the best version of yourself, I guess. And here we are.
Yeah, I guess it's not like most All-Star breaks where you get to go somewhere, right? You just probably just hung out at home.
Yeah, I kind of chilled out. I did leave the city, but it was very chill. I was able to just like reset. It was a nice reset, obviously responsibly. But it was very necessary because when you are constantly, everything is just, you know, your mind is on one thing all the time. You're completely consumed by the season. You have to step away and just think about it. So it was one thing. It was like TMRA. I think her husband covers baseball, and he used an analogy, and he was like, you have to focus the pitcher when he's on the mound. He's focusing. And then when he's about to set up again, he looks away and then he refocuses. And that's why I feel like, you know, this was very, very necessary and a good break for the entire league.
Well, I actually want to get into kind of what that level of preparation is, because I've heard it in the past of just how difficult doing your job is. Like George Sedano has talked about it, just how difficult that sideline gig is. But before we get into that, I just want to say first, I want to pass along condolences for the family of Joe Tate, as well as Cavs fans in general. I mean, at my age and also living outside of the country, I didn't have a lot of exposure to Joe Tate and his work, but reading the tributes today and just understanding the impact that either play-by-play, the voices of a team can have on a fan base, and even relating back to the experience when Fred McLeod passed away, I just want to extend my condolences on the front end before we get into the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up too, because that is a huge and a very important piece, and that's family, right? Like, I wasn't able to work while he was here, but just what I'm understanding and really learning about the city of Cleveland is that they rally around the people that have given them so much, especially on the sports front. So, I mean, I don't have to be a native of Cleveland to understand how important Joe Tate was. Mm-hmm. You know, I was able to work with Fred McLeod for the 1 year, and he impacted my life greatly. It's, you know, there's so many things even throughout this season that I'm taking with me that he taught me. One of them, you know, making a tie, you know. Yeah. So I just think as far as acknowledging their importance and sending condolences to their families. I know it's tough, but when you have some of the best fans in the world supporting you and knowing that they have your back and just sending you so much love, I think that's very important. But I thought it was one thing when I saw the news that went out on social, I was like, oh, that's tough. It kind of like took my breath away a bit. We're just coming off of a season where we celebrated the 50th anniversary, and that was cut short because of everything that was COVID. So we really didn't get to celebrate the full year and celebrate everything within the franchise the way that we wanted to. And interviewing Joe Tate was high on my list. And I remember him being at one of the games, and I said, how can we get him? You know, they're like, it's going to be tough. I don't know if he'll do it. He's all the way up there. Like, what can we do? And I just kind of said, okay, well, maybe next time. And mm-hmm. so when you see things like this happen, it's just like, you never know when that next time will be. So that's something that I'm definitely going to regret, but definitely sending condolences and so much respect for his family and everything that he brought to the franchise.
It does feel like the relationship a community has with their local announcers is, it's almost like a throwback. Like, it's such a global world now where, you know, we all have a league pass, we all have access, but like, there is a matter of like, if you're a diehard fan, you spend so much more time hearing the voice of a Fred McLeod or a Joe Tate or an Angel Gray. Yeah.
I hear more from you than some of my friends. There's a very
genuinely, we listen to that, to their voice and react to the things that we love more than we talk to some family members and dear friends. So, you know, it does feel like when someone like this passes away, you do lose kind of a family member. So, you know, similar age range to Justin, you know, we didn't have the full Joe Tate experience, but, you know, nevertheless, you know, huge condolences to the Cleveland community, because this is a big loss.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And there is no real easy way to transition off of that, but just
good luck.
Yeah. So I'm just going to do it as clumsy as possible and just go to the next question, which is, I'd love to get more details on how weird it is working through this pandemic, because you talked about some of the concessions that were forced kind of upon everybody when things shut down last season and not getting to accomplish everything you wanted to. How weird is it now going through all the restrictions, all the changes, calling games in an almost empty arena? Like, what is that experience like for you?
It's different. You know, first off, you come into the season wondering, or even before the season started, it was, okay, how does this affect my role? Mm-hmm. My initial role, like, if we cannot be around the players, if we're different tiers, then that means my level of access has changed as well. My level of access and practice has changed. Me developing relationships with the players is different. I still haven't, you know, met some of these guys face to face yet. Mm. That's just the reality of the season. And so I think when you are coming into the season, or I'll just speak for myself, just getting a couple of those text messages from other sideline reporters like, hey, what are you guys doing? What is it going to look like for you? Like, are we good? And I hope they realize how important our role is and they value what we bring to the broadcast, because it is tough, you know, and it's different. I mean, my literal title is sideline and now I'm Raptors. So it's a Raptors reporter. So it's very interesting just having that aspect change, right? But I think overall, like, you miss the travel, you miss the laughs behind the scenes, you miss the relationships and the conversations with the coaches. I really enjoyed even being on the plane sometimes and seeing the film and the coaches go through the film. Like, I'm a student of the game. I want to talk to Lindsay Gottlieb about what she's seeing, being in the elevator and talking about women's basketball and, you know, hey, let's go to a bar and check out a game as well. Like, those were the moments where you're just like, this is our sports family. Tristan Thompson said something too last year when Fred passed. He said, we see these media people more than our own families at times. And that's exactly how it is. So when that's almost stripped away from you, it's an obvious, you know, blow. I think, so we have to get creative. Like, for me, it's just, okay, that sideline aspect is taken away, but we still have one of the best communications, you know, and PR guys and teams in the country. So I have to reach out to BJ and say, hey, can I get some of these players on the phone? Can I get with coach? You know, are there any stories that we could be hitting? You know, a lot of those guys too, I know it's a bit different, you know, as far as roster, but those guys weren't in the bubble. So their voices weren't heard during a lot of, you know, what was going on for last year. Those stories are still there. So that's up to me to share it. So I think the stories, that's how I bring more to the broadcast. And I think overall, just me even being able to have a couple of analyst games too, just because of, you know, protocols and everything that AC was going through. That was awesome. You know, that was cool to connect with, you know, the city in a different level, for them to hear a different voice from me. So it's just kind of like taking it as the season comes, but so far it's been great.
Well, that actually ties in to a question we got in our Discord chat, because we have a Discord with listeners of the podcast, and they've mentioned in the past that they loved when you did your color commentary for the team. They love when you did play-by-play for WNBA. Like, they're big fans of your work in that space. And one of the questions that they had asked when we said that we were having you on is, what do you kind of envision, like, in your dream world? Would it be doing color commentary? Would it be doing play-by-play? Because, I mean, when you're doing sideline gigs, it is such a tight window to work in. Like, I think people don't fully comprehend how difficult that is. And it's so hard to, like, inject personality into that kind of a space. What would kind of your dream role be if you had your choice?
First off, you're 100% right. Like, it's so difficult, you know, showing your personality in 10 to 12 seconds. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to stutter. I want to get the word right. I want to get the story right. I want to get the toss right. So I'm like,
I would have a nervous breakdown. I would have a nervous breakdown. I can barely read. Like, I'm so grateful that I have 45 minutes to rant on these podcasts, because otherwise I'd be stumbling. I want a chance to do a redo here.
Sometimes we'll try to, like, pull a clip from the pod to, like, post on social or something like that. And both of us are so effing long-winded that the clips are, like, 6 minutes long. And I'm like, well, this isn't going to work.
So it's so funny. I think even in my first year, it was just like, two sentences and I never blinked, and I'm just like, get to the story. And so, you know, like, my executive producers are like, let them see your personality. And I'm like, they're like, we'd love to see you smile. And I'm like, well, two of those things are taken away because I have 10 seconds to do this. Then I have a mask on now. So that's completely different. Can't see me smiling, even if I'm excited about the opportunity. But I just think I'm so grateful that I can see different areas of covering a game. You know, I played the game. So I saw things from different, views, even as a point guard. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to know everyone's position because that helped me be a better point guard. So I think that's kind of like how I am in my career at this point. I started off as a production assistant with Fox Sports Florida in Orlando. I was creating shows. I was writing scripts. I was doing those type of things. And now it was like, and then from that point, they were like, hey, we know that you want to do some on-camera stuff. You want to be a reporter, reported in that realm, did, you know, radio, you know, analyst work, obviously sideline and the WNBA play-by-play, which was a mistake, honestly. I was like, when I got the contract that said play-by-play, I was like, you sent the wrong one. So let's reconfigure some things. And they were like, we believe you can do it. Are you up for it? Mm-hmm. Scared the crap out of me, but I was, because it allowed me to see the game from a different angle. I love breaking down the game. I love talking the game. That's when I'm in my element. You can tell a different angel just lights up.
Yeah.
When I'm there, like, saying, hey, did you just see what just happened? Like, sometimes in my chair, even, you know, I'm just talking back to my producer, like, oh, that clip was really, really good. That was one of the best defensive series that they had, you know, and then they'll, you know, bring it up, or they probably saw the same thing and they're giving it to the analyst and play-by-play with John and AC. But I love that aspect of my job. I think I'm growing into a better reporter. I love the position that I have, but I think overall, I want to just share those stories. If it's in a hosting position where I can sometimes do sideline, but also, you know, be at the desk and talk about the game and, you know, go back and forth between doing different stories and really doing different sit downs. I think a really good example of that is Maria Taylor and what she's been able to do. She's a great friend of mine. One of the people that I revere in this league, this business, because she just gets it right all the time. She's so good at what she does and doing college, you know, game day on the sidelines, but also being, you know, for NBA, you know, highlights and breaking things down with ESPN at the desk, but then also doing those stories. That's a dream come true, you know? And I just think, I think I bring a valuable piece to the puzzle. I'm a valuable piece of the puzzle. And I just want to continue to bring that knowledge and just passion and energy to the game.
How do your goals differ in the two spots? Because, you know, for a frame of reference, in my day job, I'm also a producer. I work in the esports space. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of talent. And, you know, I try to be very, very clear, because sometimes you do have to straddle, you know, a lot of different roles. So, like, when you're sideline reporting, what are your priorities? And how does that differ from when you're in the booth running color commentary?
It's quite different. First off, we already alluded to the time that you actually get to get into something in a story. I think for Sideline, it's the quick hits. What are you seeing that the average person isn't seeing? Or what's a story that you picked up that everyone else doesn't already know? How can you feed into that? I think even just being a reporter for a team, you're not always going to break the news. Like, because we have that relationship with them where we do have information, but it's not our job to release it.
Yeah.
So our angle has to be, what's your view? Like, what can you add to that that no one else can? Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important for my role. I think to that as well, just I enjoy the halftime interviews with the coaches because we actually get to break down the game. I'm like, hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. You know, coach, what did you see here? You know, this, their amount of turnovers here. And, you know, the pace was different. You said you wanted to work on that. That allows me to kind of put on that analyst hat in a sense and then toss it back to the guys. I think my team and network does a really good job of saying, if you want to add anything, just go in there and, you know, add that piece. We want to hear your voice. My producer, even with Brent Valenti, he's like, what stories are we bringing to the table so we can hear your voice more within the broadcast? And I deeply appreciate that as well. I know some reporters don't have that luxury where it's one or two hits and that's it. So I think it's different in the analyst chair because you're really starting to break down the film. I don't have to break down film to report a story, you know. I'm talking to other coaches. I'm talking to other players. I'm talking to other sideline. I really want to understand both sides of the story. So even if I'm calling for a specific team, I want it to almost sound like you're listening to an unbiased broadcast, like a national broadcast,
right?
Because you got to know both sides of the story to see the full picture. And so I think that's where it's different. There's a lot more prep work in that analyst role.
How much of the game are you actually able to take in when you are doing the sideline gig? Because I feel like that would be, if I attempted to do it, which would go up in flames, I feel like I would get so easily distracted. That's one of my signature traits. But how much are you able to take in real time versus like going back and almost having to do homework of re-reviewing the game?
You know what? I think it depends on the pace of the game. You know, sometimes there's 50, you know, fouls or timeouts everywhere. And you're like, okay, this is slower. So I can kind of catch up with things. Sometimes it's going so fast that I'm like, okay, let me just get ready for the next thing. Cause I know that within the broadcast, I have to, you know, go on at a certain point. And I want to be able to know what I'm talking about too. Like, I don't just want it to be generic. Like, how do you feel, guys?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's one of my rules for sideline reporters.
Yes.
When I produce is, unless you just want a title, I don't want to hear how they feel.
Very valid point. So I think my first year, because this is a job that is just such a dream come true type situation. My first time actually walking in, and I don't even know what game it was, but I just felt the energy of the crowd. And it was just like big play after big play. And like, you know, Colin did something and then someone else went off, and it was just like a series of events that I was like, this is work. Oh shoot, I'm working, you know? And so I think I get I don't know, like there's just this moment of just like, I can't believe that I'm actually able to do what I said I wanted to do. So you have that moment. But then you have to snap back because you will lose that moment if you don't stay focused on the game. So I think overall, like, and I'll just go back to this too. I remember just a story just about how focused you have to be within the game, right? I remember being so gung-ho about getting this interview with Kobe that I was like, okay, what do we need to do? How do I get this, you know, interview done? And the PR person was just like, just go to him, ask him. I was like, you want me to walk up to Kobe and ask him to do an interview? And at the time it was, I think during 2016, 2017, WNBA finals, he came in at the Staples Center, sorry. And he was there with his family, with Gigi, his wife, and sitting courtside. Everybody's like, wow, this guy who just retired, this legend. And I have to find a way to get to him and ask him how to get the interview. Mm-hmm. So I finally got up there, did the interview, and he's like, great job. But then the next thing was, all right, so now for work, you have to interview Magic Johnson in the back. I'm like, okay, on the way there. So I interview Magic Johnson. But I did not, none of that settled in until after the game.
That's fair.
When I literally walked across the street and they were like, did we just see you down there with Kobe? And I was like, wow, I guess you did. Yes. You know, because it wasn't even like something that was released at that point. So when you have a job to do, you just want to execute it the best way you can. And then it settles in after.
And you chased like it to with talking to Magic Johnson. That's, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, just a couple small names. That's the kind of people we get on this podcast all the time. It's not a big deal.
It literally blows my mind. Like, I kid you not. I was just so focused on not messing up. And you guys remember just how laser sharp, focused, and detailed literally Kobe is. So I was like, I cannot stutter. I want this to be fun. I want this to be precise. And, you know, I just want him to just enjoy this interview. And so that's all I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. And after, he was like, good job. And I was like, well, I can die now. Like, this is it. But it's just those things that go through your mind. You're like, I just want to be really, really good at my job. You know, I mean, it's great that I get to have these opportunities, but I can continue to have these opportunities if I excel in my position.
For sure. And I did want to, you know, with the second half of the season coming up, you know, we did want to talk a little bit Cavs. And, you know, one thing we were just kind of curious about, you are much closer to this team, even with your limited access, than we ever can be. I'm in Columbus. Justin's ass is in Winnipeg. And, you know, so we don't get to be around or see the kind of what's happening behind the curtain very often. What has maybe caught you a little off guard about this team's performance this season? Like, what surprised you?
I think right out of the gate, it surprised me.
Yeah.
We start 3-0 and I'm like, wait a minute. I thought it was going to take a little bit more time than this, but the way that they were playing together, it was like, they're hungry. They are buying into the mantra of Coach Bickerstaff of being the most competitive team and the most selfless team. And by God, you're seeing them just jump as far as stats from offense and defense. Mm-hmm. So we had the number one defensive rating for a good portion of that first, you know, half. And, you know, Larry is leading in steals. And it was just very interesting because last year we were at the very bottom.
Yeah.
And so you can see just mentally the shift and what was important, even during the stretch where 10 straight games for, you know, losing, like they're not playing the basketball that they showed that they can play. So it's one different thing where it's just like, maybe it's going to take them time to get there, but that's why everyone was just like, what's different, you know? And I know that you have to, you know, bring into account the injuries that they had and that they were suffering through. And then just the different lineups, you know, you had people playing out of position. You had, you know, a playoff team every single night, you know, on the road. So those are things that are obviously tough. Mm-hmm. But what's impressed me is that this team, although we saw them bend, they did not break. And they were able to bounce back. I really wish they would have won the game against the Pacers, you know, before the,
break. Carter calls me a crazy person on many occasions. But I actually said that that loss bugged me. Like, that stuck with me more than any loss since, like, the 2018 playoffs. Because, like, what I wanted was for it to go into a five-game winning streak. I wasn't mad at the team. I wasn't mad at the players. I was just sitting there, like, just talking to myself, like, you know what? They would have won if Darius didn't get hurt. They would have won if Darius didn't get hurt. You know what? Five-game winning streak, we would have been like a game out of the play-in. It would have been great. But I think your point's a great one, that they've bent but didn't break. They've shown resilience, and the fact that they were able to turn the season around without any of the veterans coming back, without a strong presence like Larry coming back into the lineup, or Kevin Love, guys that make things easier for them, was really, really impressive. So much of the season has been talking about developing a culture and creating accountability, a culture of accountability. How would you go about, as someone that's closer to this team, how would you define the culture that they are building right now?
That's a great question. I think it's just understanding this team and the pieces that they have. They'll all tell you, we have to work hard. It has to be a we thing. It can't be an individual game. And I think, actually, Jared Allen said, we don't have, you know, the most talented pieces. We don't have, you know, the elite players of the league that are teaming up and just building this huge, you know, super team. We have to do this together. And if one person is off, that means we're all off. And you saw how that kind of like shifted, you know, this little roller coaster ride that they had, you know, through the first half. But I think the fact that they're like, but we're not pointing the finger. We are in this together. We're frustrated. We hate losing. Some teams will be like, oh, that whatever, you know, it's just another year. But they were really like trying to find ways to get back on track. How are we going to do this together? And Coach Bickerstaff said, you know, I'm seeing these guys at the end of the game and they may be like on each other, but it's never like a blame thing. It's a family and they're trying to work together to get to the goals that we said it was that we wanted at the end of the season. And it's going to be tough. There are going to be hard times. And even when they won at the beginning of the season, he said, I just want to see this same energy, the same style and the same mentality when we hit adversity. So that's been the culture shift to me. That's the most important part of understanding. It's not just an individual game. When you do see that, there is no success there. So I think that they're just pulling the pieces together. I think you can go down the line for people that have stepped in and just had remarkable moments in the season. I think too, it's really awesome. I don't think we give JaVale McGee his flowers enough for his voice, his impact in the locker room, what he does, the minutes that he does receive, they're impactful. He is a nightmare in the paint. And I just think overall, he just shows everyone else on the floor how to win and what it takes to win, not just being the high scorer, but that mentality as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that preparation extends to how you work out, how you get ready for games, how you recover. Like Carter and I have both been such big advocates for having adults in the locker room. And I think pointing out guys like JaVale McGee, pointing out what Larry Nance Jr. has done on and off the floor. I think it's absolutely essential because I think one of the things that just I'm guessing here, but it seems like the Cavs learned from some of the things that didn't go so well after the decision where there wasn't a whole lot of adults in the locker room where guys were like Kyrie and Dion were kind of left to figure things out themselves. There wasn't a defined role. So you had guys butting heads and it just seems much healthier. It seems like a healthier environment this time around, which as a fan, I really appreciate.
As a reporter, I appreciate it too.
Yeah.
Makes my job sure. A lot easier.
In terms of the culture though, you know, I always think it's a bit of a chicken and the egg thing. It's like, do you decide on a culture and then build around it? Or is it built around the people that you have in the room? You know, like for example, you know, some people will say that the Spurs culture that, you know, the lauded San Antonio Spurs culture was just because they had Duncan. They had a superstar that could buy in like that. And in terms of what we're seeing being built by the Cavs, how much do you think the kinds of players they've decided to invest in, you know, both, you know, contractually and just like in the way that the organization is building factors into that? You know, you have the Colin Sextons and the Isaac Okoros of the world who by all reports are just maniacs and just work harder than anyone else. And then, you know, the Larry Nances of the world who can be the veteran leader. Like how much do you think just literally the kind of personnel that they've invested in is building their way towards that culture?
It's huge. And I think overall, when you see a tree, you don't really take into account the stability of the roots. And I think it's the top of the chain. Like when we're talking about the owners, the GMs, you know, the people in the front office, the scouts that are like, this is who we are going for. This is the type of player that we are going for because we know that's going to build on the locker room, being competitive and growing and developing into a team that can be, you know, in the playoffs or contenders. And I think that's very important that everybody is on the same page. And I think that's why, too, you know, even with Coach Bickerstaff and his staff, they all just kind of work together. They all fit together. No one's the same. You know, everyone has a different voice. And I think that's very important. So when you have that and you have players that are also respecting their voice and what they're bringing to the table, you have that player coach relationship, then it's like there's more trust that's established. And then you know what type of player is in the locker room too. So to your point, Carter, when you're looking at the style of player, you know, who are we scouting? That's super important, you know, and you have to gel. It's important that each person is for the other, especially to win, you know, as well as, you know, a young team. You have a couple of pieces sprinkled in there that have been here, done that, but not enough to say, okay, like, how can we establish this for a young group? Not all vets are willing to take that chance. They're like, I want to win. I've already gone through this before. You know, that's the end of the story. But I think what's so impressive about what they've been able to do here you can just see how much of a family it is. And it's really exciting to cover that. They are a brotherhood. I think some of my most, my favorite moments are, you know, after a game wins, when I see JaVale McGee coming up with this production, you know, after that he posts on Instagram, you know, with them in the locker room. We don't get to see the locker room anymore. Mm-hmm. So he's our access, and we get to see how close they are and how they celebrate one another.
Yeah, it's, I absolutely love the JaVale McGee productions. I hope that they never go away. Like a lifetime contract. I want all of that. I want that because, I mean, that's what gets you invested. Because so many people, there's a lot of different ways to consume sports, and people prioritize different things. Some people are just in it for the rings culture. I mean, I think one of the things we always try to do is really live in the moment and enjoy this and get invested in those guys. So when you see the young guys are putting in the work, they have this work ethic, you have these great vets that are showing off the personality of the team. Like, to me, that's what this is all about, because 72 or 82 games a night, this is the team I'm invested in. This is the team I'm checking out. So it's really nice to see it all come together. It also helps that it's in line with a lot of my preseason predictions, and I just love being right.
Oh, don't you love that?
Yeah, I predicted.
I cannot, if we had a drinking game for every time Justin mentioned the amount of wins they were on pace for, and what his prediction was, no one would make it through.
You literally cut me off right before I did that. So thank you for that, Carter. Thank you for stopping.
I'm glad to get ahead of it.
Yeah, thank you. See, that's the producer instance right there.
That's the culture that you guys have established there. So it's nice that you guys can play off of one another very well.
Well, when you're as predictable as the two of us are, it's really not that hard.
That's really what it is. But I appreciate Carter's producer instincts jumping in there. If you had to pick one, and I know this is difficult, from the coaching staff to the players, who do you kind of feel is like a standout performer that has really driven the success? Would you kind of give that credit to the coaching staff? Is there a specific player? Who would you kind of give your flowers to in this situation?
This is a tough question, because obviously the coaching staff does a great job, but these are also professionals that you can see them at different places, but do they have the same impact? So you're looking at the impact of the player where we are now. This is tough. You're putting me in a really tough position here.
Yeah,
listen, you're welcome. We're capital J journalists, aren't we?
I think there are just so many stories that I can touch on. I think the growth and the development over the years of Colin Sexton, and seeing him just have a more balanced game, is so impressive to me. Mm-hmm. I can't speak highly enough of that. And that's why he was getting those All-Star votes. But I think, too, Jared Allen. Oh, what
he's
a
so likable.
He's just everywhere. Like, there's just times when you mentioned before, do you just watch the game? Do you ever just like take in the game? When he's on one end setting a screen, rolling to the basket, dunking on someone, and then the next time, you know, he's on the other end blocking a shot, getting a steal, and then running in transition, it's just like, this guy is legit. This guy is
he has 22 years old.
He's 22 years old. The fro alone gives him about 10 years. And I'm like, this is crazy. But I think too, even in the last game, you saw the importance of Darius Garland, how important he is on the floor, and how he's the glue. And
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm kind of curious, because, you know, we've talked about this a lot, that we thought Darius was going to be a gunner. That was his rep coming into the league, and he's a pure point as a pure point can be. How much has the way he plays surprised you?
I think, because I didn't do a lot of research, honestly. I didn't see a lot of his film. I just knew that they were like, he's shifty. Just talking to the guys, how do you feel about what he can be? And they were like, he's good. He's legit. And he just knows when and where. I think as a point guard, you're like thinking, are they just out there just ball handling? Are they commanding the floor? Or are they making people better? He makes people better. He makes the team better. And so for me, I'm impressed with the fact that he's lethal from the outside. He can also create his own shot and give us like this, you know, top 10, you know, play highlight of getting to the basket. We know his floater is legit too, but it's how his lobs are, you know, the most amazing things too. So overall, I just think the way that he's able to make everyone better is impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the way that he there's an extra bit of craft that goes beyond, you know, the ball handling and just playing the two-man game. Like, he does when he's commanding the ball in a high pick and roll, I just feel like the way he manipulates the defense is really, really advanced, you know. And Justin and I have been talking about how when we were kind of doing our first half recap, Justin's big take here has been Darius is primed for a scoring breakout because the percentages haven't been good as of late. Like, the jumper is not falling, but everything else is so locked in right now that if the jumper starts falling, mm-hmm. then he takes a lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the assertiveness is so much better as of late. Like, he's taking those shots, and it's I guess you got to give a lot of credit to the Cavs player development staff too, because everyone talks about coaching as if it's one guy, and they do the same thing for front offices and general managers. But you look and it's row after row of these people on the sideline. And I think it's even more apparent now that there's not fans, but I just really think that it speaks well for the organization that the core guys they've drafted all continuously improve. They all appear to be bought in. Mm-hmm. Then you got these fringe guys like Lamar Stevens, who got his break and is making the most of that opportunity. He's prepared for the opportunity. Dean Wade, same situation. I just think it's a feather in the cap for the Cavs coaching development staff. And you're laughing right now, so I'm only
laughing because of the last game where he was going on fire. He was like 5 for 5 from the 3-point line. And I was like, I'm telling my kids this is D Wade. And then it just got
worse. I think a couple games ago he actually surpassed Dwayne Wade's minutes total as a Cavalier.
I love the story. I love how people buy into it. They're like, D-Wade, I love it. Absolutely. But Lamar Stevens, I'm glad that you brought him up. I mean, this is a two-way player, mm-hmm. a player that is literally trying to prove his worth, his value in this league. And he steps up, and every time he delivers, he's fearless. He makes big shots. Obviously, we've seen a game winner from him already. But defensively, we saw him on Kawhi Leonard. Like, what? So I just think when you have players that are just say, hey, the coach can call on you and they know what they're going to get out of you, that's special.
Mm-hmm. And Justin's often talked about it. Justin, you've mentioned that this is an organization that wants to pattern itself after the Miami Heats of the world. And what those organizations do is they find diamonds in the rough and they find players who can contribute that aren't obviously, standouts. And I feel like Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade's of the world really, really play into that. Like, if you're able to find contributors among two-way players, among undrafted players, then all of a sudden your organizational depth gets so much better. And, you know, after seeing this stretch from Dean Wade, where he's been really, really capable filling in as a starter, it's like, we now know that the team can weather a lot more adversity and come out the other side once they are fully healthy.
I'm so happy that he's getting these moments. I really am excited and eager to see a healthy roster, though. But it's
one thing I wanted to ask right before we let you go, and I know we've been so generous with your time. We've talked a lot about what's good about the Cavaliers organization and, you know, about the things that we're hopeful about. But we do know that right now they're competing for a play-in spot. They're competing for an end of, 8, 9, 10 seed. What do you think the number one difference or area for growth that this team has to move into that true East contender status? Like, what's kind of the missing piece, whether it's internal development, whether it's, you know, an extra help on the wing? Like, what do you think the big area for growth for this team is?
A stretch four. We need a consistent shooter from the outside. I think
that luckily.
Luckily we got one, right? Hopefully a healthy one. So I think overall, we just haven't seen this team complete yet. So we don't know exactly what that look may be. You know, what will it look like with Kevin Love and Larry on the floor? You know, what does that look like defensively, offensively, pace-wise? So I just think overall this team and the trajectory of the league too, you have to be able to put up more threes. You saw how they were trying to do that and execute that at the end of the first half of the season and how it worked well for them, right? They were actually very conscious of it and focused on getting those threes up, especially for Darius. I mean, throughout the whole team, Jared Allen was shooting threes. And so I was like, oh, this is different. But I think you add that piece, but you also add consistency. Mm-hmm. With a young team that really hasn't together as a cohesive unit, experience the success together for long stretches, that's what they're trying to build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're on the money there. That's one of the fun things about watching a team that's starting four guys that are 22 or younger. Like, consistency is going to be the big thing, because we've seen when they're on, they're clicking. They can compete with anybody. But those growing pains and staying competitive in all these games, that's how you get better. That's how you actually improve internally.
And that's why my only big thing is, yeah, like, sure, they could maybe use some ball handling on the wing. They could use some more volume 3-point shooting. But I think the number one goal for this team is the only thing you can't rush, which is get older.
Yeah.
There you have it. Like, maybe that should be the, you know, title of your book.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the one right there.
I want this team to get older and for me to stay the same age, because I don't think my knees are getting much older.
I'm not going to take on extra years. That's definitely not a part of the plan. But yeah, I do think too, to your point, it was a struggle for them, even for the backup point guard position. Like, who's going to be able to take, you know, care of the ball? We saw Damian Dotson and how he was able to, you know, hold his own, especially in the beginning of the season when Colin and Darius were out. But there has to be another backup that's reliable and consistent. And I think that's one thing, you know, that they can definitely use. I think Dante Exum was that player for them before, and that depth just isn't in the same space.
Yeah, they definitely need to get healthy, get those guys that can bring what they've been missing to the table. So really looking forward to the second half. Thank you so much, Angel, for your time. We really, really appreciate you coming on the podcast. We'll go back to our normal role of listening to you maybe like 4 or 5 times a week. This schedule is crazy.
I hope you enjoyed the vacation, because it's over.
Oh, thank you. I have 2 days left. Thank you. Well, no, I don't. It's crazy tomorrow. So, but well, thank you. I really do appreciate you guys. You guys are doing a phenomenal job. I always see you guys tweeting the most amazing stuff. I'm a fan of the podcast as well. So thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for those kind words. I'm going to be blushing and skipping for the rest of the day. Thank you so much, Angel. And thank you to our listeners as well. You guys, your support is absolutely amazing. If you want to support the podcast, make sure you do what I always ask you to do, which is leave that rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.